good.
That's good, David.
All right.
I couldn't remember that to save my life.
Okay. Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, this is episode 4 of Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. This episode is entitled, You Can Never Get Enough Shakespeare.
Or can you?
That's right. This is a new episode and it's a new year, as a matter of fact, and it's an exciting episode because of two things. Number one, our third geek, Marcia, is back from Southern California, where she has been away for a while on hiatus, as we say. And we also have, for the first time, a guest in the studio, so to speak. And our guest today is Chris Judson, who is an English teacher here in Elkhart, Indiana, at Concord High Schools. And Chris had a rather extraordinary adventure last summer, and it was a project called 40 Plays in 40 Days. Can you tell us just a little bit about what that was about?
Well, there's an organization in the state of Indiana. The Lilly Foundation gives out every year a competitive grant for teachers to basically design a summer experience. So and then give them money for that. And so I've been applying for this grant for about 7 years, and this past year came up with the idea of trying to see all of Shakespeare's plays in one summer. I got notification in actually February of last year that I received the grant, and so that's what I ended up doing this past summer.
Okay, so you traveled around the country seeing it's really not 40.
It was, well,
40 sounds better. What rhymes with 38?
Plays in 40 days. It sounds almost biblical, doesn't it? You know,
biblical proportions.
Yes.
Well, and that was a part of it. It was a catchy title, and for those people out there who have written grants, the catchy title would get it. And I think when I got the title, I figured this would be the time. But anyway, so the idea was, at least in my Riverside Shakespeare that I grew up with from my undergrad, there were 38 of Shakespeare's plays. So the idea was twofold. Number one, there's the stunt idea. So like in one summer, could I see all 38 plays? And then the other, and I wrote this in my grant, the other part of it was how accessible is Shakespeare in several different venues that I end up seeing. And so the first part of that took me from the day after school got out in June, and we were in our car headed to Pennsylvania, and I ended the Saturday night before school started in seeing Julius Caesar in Buffalo, New York. And so it did encompass my whole summer, and in a sense, loopholes and sort of things. I got to see all 38 plays.
Cool.
So it was cool. Yeah, it really was. And my family got to be a part of it, some of it, but I spent a lot of time in the car. Mm-hmm. A lot of time in the car.
How many miles was that, you said?
14,000 miles in the car. Yes. And then two trips we took in July, got to go out to California and see my family, but then saw 7 plays in 9 days.
Mm-hmm.
When, started in San Francisco, ran down the coast, ran over to Lake Tahoe, ran back, and then got back on the plane. And then the following weekend, went out to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland.
Okay.
So flew out there again.
Did you have this all plotted out before you left, obviously?
Right. I spent lots of time on my computer. So when I got notification, then I sat down. When I was writing my proposal, I had to do kind of a feasibility study. Could I do it? And it was interesting. No one really publishes their stuff super early for you to write a grant. In November, they're not already telling you, here's what we're going to do in the summer. But there was one theater group in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, that said that they were going to perform Cymbeline, which I thought, okay, cool. That's not the most common one in the world. So in writing the proposal, I said, I think I can pull it off. So then when I got the proposal, then I spent really about an entire month when we were watching TV and just tagging every single Shakespeare Festival in the United States, and then tagging it in such a way that I can go and say, okay, so they're doing all these plays, and here's the general months that they're doing them. And then spent the next month building a calendar. In fact, during my spring break, I was able to build a calendar. And that first build, I was able to get about 25 of the plays. Hmm. Which, and then by the time summer started, was able to get 31 performances.
It's amazing to me that you could get to see all 38, because especially in the summer, which is kind of like the vacation thing and people mm-hmm. want to go see fun things, I can't imagine too many people flocking to see Titus Andronicus, it's amazing to me that you were able to spot all 38 in one summer.
Right. Well, technically, I saw 31.
Oh, now it comes out.
There you go.
Well, and that was, and for me, I would think, and I'm not sure how many people have pulled this off in the States. Now, if I were in the UK, I think I would have been able to do it fairly easily, because history plays are not super popular here in the States. Go figure. But to be able to pull that off, and I thought 31, that's not bad. I mean, 31, including the history plays and comedies were easy, but some of those minor tragedies, mm-hmm. like you said. Well, then I got the idea from the Nashville Shakespeare Company, who every month they've been reading through the canon. So they do a read aloud, at the local library there. And I thought, well, and I was going to do Richard II with them. And then I thought, you know what? I might as well go ahead and pick up the other ones and just
right.
rope my family into reading. So I was able to do that. So I wrote my family on family vacation down in downstate Tennessee to read aloud Timon of Athens.
Your family must love you a lot.
Oh, my God.
They still, my father-in-law still insists that's the thing that ruined his summer. But through this, and in fact, all my read alouds that I had in our house. So in fact, we did the Two Noble Kinsmen. Again, how there's not a lot of people that are doing Two Noble Kinsmen. My sons did it with me. So we sat down and I said, okay, we're gonna break it up. We'll stop after every act and, kind of mess around and stuff like that. And they actually kind of enjoyed it. And they're 9 and 12 years old. By the end of the summer, I was able then, I took the reading to be that I've experienced all Shakespeare's works.
I want to come back to the thing about your kids, because I think that's very interesting. But the one thing, as a spectator or as someone who, for anyone who has not ever seen Shakespeare at all or is, familiar with the really popular ones, right. maybe, but, what's the value of seeing, I guess, Shakespeare specifically, and seeing that much Shakespeare at once, and especially seeing some of the ones that are not so well known.
Well, I mean, like I said before, it was the stunt value. So I was, this summer had me being like Around the World in 80 Days meets, Amazing Race. There was the rush of getting to the venue. Mm-hmm. And I think for me that was one of the things I was constantly trying to remind myself, is that I didn't go into this experience being a critic. I made that decision very early on, mm-hmm. that I wanted to try to be the audience member that, and some people may be saying, I'm setting my sights too low, but I had this general philosophy that if for me, I was happy at the end of a play, if it appeared that the actors were doing their job and that there wasn't a point where it seemed like things fell apart. And I know that you've never experienced that with
never,
a situation.
Ever.
Oh, certainly not.
Where you go, oh no, we've got a fiasco on our hands. And so, and honestly, after, the 31 that I saw, there were only two that I was concerned about. And one of them was, I think it was during 4th of July, and we sat way far in the back. And so we had someone to our left that had started on the drinking very early on and then talked their way through the entire performance.
Oh, goody.
And then we have, it's right around 4th of July, so you had the fireworks kind of going off. And then, but I also felt like the actors, and I wasn't looking for perfection, but it just seemed like they were just trying to get through it as fast as they could.
Kind of phoning it in.
Well, it was a free performance, and it was a very established place, and maybe it was just time, place, and manner. Maybe that was just a bad night. But that one was not, that wasn't a very positive experience for my family. The other one, I honestly do blame the company, mostly because there was no, they're doing a community piece. They're doing a community theater, and there's a relationship that seems to be that you need to build with your audience. You want those people to come back. You want those people to say, "Hey, I just saw a really cool performance. Why don't you pick it?" You know, there was no introductory. You know, I'm used to welcome. You know, how are you doing? And you know, at the end, we hope you enjoy your time. You know, here's where we're going to be next. It was one of these traveling troupes. And then, oh yeah, by the way, you know, at the end, we, you know, support our cause, because if anything, community theater can, you know, use some donations. And one of the things I had decided very early on in the process that, you know, I wasn't just going to freeload that I had built into my budget, that I was going to go ahead and put money, you know, donate. It's the least that I could do, you know, $20 or whatever, because, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. And this one company, you know, it was over, and then they were just out of there. And I felt like, you know, dude, you know, that was just really disappointing for me. But yeah. So that was
community theater without the community.
Well, it was. That disconnect. But I would have to say, even from the newer companies that I saw to the more well established, there was, and I think you can do this. What I've learned is, I think that you can build that communication, because I think in the Shakespearean plays, there's opportunity to acknowledge the audience, especially I think within the comedies, you know, whenever you have those asides, yeah, that you're going to let the audience know, as, you know, somebody like Richard III, right? Where you tell them right at the very beginning, you're telling the audience, "I'm bad. In fact, I'm so bad. Here's my plot line that I'm going to do." And you don't have to
Me do it.
Right. And it was and that was so sweet to see, like in, you know, Iowa, but I could, you know, countless times there was this, you know, we're going to make that connection. And I think sometimes Shakespeare can allow for that flexibility to make that, and not go overboard and, you know, run through all the aisles. That you may do that, but that connection can be made.
Okay, I have a question.
Okay.
How important do you think it is for people to know what the play's about, to have some connection or understanding of the Shakespearean language? Because I know I've watched people who were in Shakespeare plays sit with a huge book of – it's like a dictionary, and it gives all the meanings for the different words that are used that were good at the time, and we don't use them anymore.
Right.
So how important do you think the language, knowledge of the language is?
I'm also a teacher, and so this is something that I've been thinking through for a long time. And I feel like sometimes we spend a lot of time relying on other sources to tell us what's happening. And so one of the things I try to do this summer, but I also do this when I go to see a play, I don't read plot summaries. I figure if they're going to do their job and it's accessible enough, again, that's what I was doing this summer, even with Timon of Athens and some of these other ones, I wanted to go into it fresh. And could I just sit there and could I pick up on it? And was it David Sedaris who says, basically, you just watch their hands and the tone of their voice and you can pick up what's happening. There's, you know, that anger in their voice. And there's two ways I can answer that. So I'm just going through a second pass of Julius Caesar with my sophomores right now. And I started off not doing what we as English teachers do, and that is kill any hope for Shakespeare in their lives. And I said, "Here we go." No, I'm serious.
I thought that was one of your objectives.
Well, and a kid said that this summer in Michigan, you know, it was a talk back, and it was like a Q&A with the cast members. And they said that the boy said, "You know, I'm in high school, and I love coming to see Shakespeare." You know, obviously that family had that experience; they've been doing it forever. But he says, "I hate when we get into school and they just suck the life out of it." You know, and I think sometimes we have a tendency of trying to give so much historical background, So like, think about Julius Caesar. Okay, so now let's go and study about Rome. You know? Okay. And so what I decide with them, and I said, and my goal with my students is not so much I can make you love Shakespeare. I am not that dynamic. I'm not an actor. I can't bring in, let's go ahead and do this scene. And you know, the kids, I'm not an inspirational film at all. But I feel like what I can do with them is I said, I just want to make sure that you don't hate Shakespeare. If we can get through this and we're going to be fine. And I think I think we kill it. So I just showed them the film version, no prompting, no nothing. All I want you to do, just write down what's happening. And it wasn't that I was surprised, but my thesis I think was correct. They were able to find out what was going on. Now they weren't sure about what was happening with Brutus and Cassius in Act 4 and why were they arguing and stuff like that, but they could get the plot line by the end.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that I could say with that, and I can go to my own sons with this, the 9-year-old and also the 12-year-old, and they read a lot, so maybe they don't count, but they just really got into it. They love watching The Tempest. They enjoyed Midsummer Night's Dream, which was set in the 30s, this version was, and it was, they did it well. They did that play well, that company there, and they get it. Now, what they ended up doing is, and after they saw the play, Shakespeare for Dummies, reduced Shakespeare's book on the stuff, and they go back and they read several different what was going on. But if you're saying, do you have to be an expert in it? I'm not sure as we as audience in a performance get every single word that's going on, but we can kind of feel the tone that's going through.
Yeah.
So the only thing that I know that my students are struggling with is, what is the deal with the long speeches? You know? And so I'm sure you've seen enough Shakespeare where those long speeches just make you want to fall asleep or something like that.
Well, I guess it depends who's doing it.
Well, and it also, well, I mean, it's an aspect of the time. I mean, you know, we talk about it's, you know, presentational versus representational acting, you know, a lot of, you know, theater came out of the Greeks and was basically born out of oratory. So that's where, you know, I mean, I think so oratory was very respected at that time. So if you could make a long speech, I think that was great entertainment in some respects, wouldn't you think?
Okay, now I have to ask you, jump right in here, John.
You know, I'm just interested in listening. How you doing, John? I'm great down here.
can you tell us what were your favorite performances and productions? And you've already said the two that kind of didn't get you at all, or you didn't get it at all. You didn't like them.
Well, and I didn't like them. You know, there's like hierarchy with Shakespeare plays, which are the great ones, which are the lesser and that sort of thing. And
that doesn't mean that you enjoy them the most.
No, because I like, just like snapshot of ones.
Right.
I think I enjoyed it because I enjoyed the experience. You know, as an audience member, I'd go into it and just go, this was just a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. You know, now obviously, again, I know that I'm an English teacher and I'm supposed to understand all. By the way, Shakespeare's not my favorite person in the world. So the reason why I pick Shakespeare is because it's something that we talk about a lot. But I didn't pick him because I love Shakespeare. I just thought he's cranked out a number of things. So, okay.
That's a whole nother discussion.
Yes, thank you very much, sir.
Okay.
I liked Titus Andronicus in The Blackfriars, Stanton, Virginia. It was
gore from one end to the other.
Well, yeah. And I haven't seen Pulp Fiction. But I've heard.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the reason why I like that, because it was an experience as a theater goer, that the venue was sweet, it was cool, the actors are singing these fun songs beforehand, so you're already making a connection with the actors, and then the performance itself was one of those things where, you know, they say in the brochure, we're trying to recreate how Shakespeare was done, and I kind of understand that, but they really made sure that we as an audience were part of it. In fact, I'm so used to going to Stratford in Ontario, which we take our students up to, and I'm so used to folding my hands and, you know, leaning forward and taking in classical theater. And so I get here, and it's like a little bit of a rock concert. You know, they're serving wine and stuff like that. I don't know what to do. Do I partake of the wine or something like that? But it was just a wonderful experience. In Washington, D.C., saw at the Shakespeare and Company King Lear, set in kind of a third world coup. And they had, that was by far the most expensive that I've ever seen. I mean, it was obvious. They brought a BMW on stage. They had the helicopter. It was just all this pyrotechnic stuff. But it translated so well. And, you know, you cry. I mean, you do. You literally cry of what happens in the end because they just pulled you in. So there was like a few. And then in California, I saw several. Old Globe, Coriolanus, which apparently people don't read at all. Wow. No. And they were – and I think the key there was that they took a text – and they, you know, reinterpreted, you know, time and place, and they were all into it, and I got it. And so I think for me it was, and I just mentioned those three. Those were just very positive experiences, and I walked away thinking, man, that was pretty good.
We're all looking at John.
Oh, everybody looks at me.
Yeah,
I don't want to feel like we're hogging John.
Well, but my brain just keeps going back to, okay, so you maybe I don't want to be the downer, but so because as with my teaching background as well, because I have my teaching degree, not right. that I use it except
so, okay,
you've
taught me so much
with my
John.
Background. Yeah, I guess my question is now that you've done the Lilly Grant, you've done the exciting part, which is seeing all these shows, some good, some bad. How do you now incorporate that into your classroom, or was it just the experience that allows you to say now how you were talking about how you actually work with the kids in trying not to get them to hate Shakespeare?
Right. And I think, first of all, it was that working thesis of, could I do it and that sort of thing. So there's obviously that personal story, which I find very, very important to me. I think it probably continues to go along with my philosophy of, how do we teach literature to students? And there's sometimes, I mean, you open up a typical high school textbook and it's more about literature rather than having students read literature. So that part of me said, remind me of, I want my students to spend more time reading the text, whatever it is, Shakespeare or, To Kill a Mockingbird, rather than knowing about it. Which then removes this idea for me of that they have to make sure that they know these facts of what happens in this play as opposed to that they've experienced the play. Mm-hmm. So how that works out in my classroom is, we, like I said, with Julius Caesar, we did first pass, they took notes, and then did a summary statement. What did you see? And the idea is that I think this is true for Shakespeare, the more Shakespeare you see, the more you understand. I remember as a sophomore when we had to go through Macbeth and listening to my friends read Macbeth aloud in class. And I thought it was fine. But then when I saw it 10 years later, I got more out of it. And then as I read it more, and then when I saw it this summer in Nebraska and how they ended up doing the witch scene and they were more like nymph sort of thing and had this relationship, this weird relationship with power, I got more from it. So I think the idea is that the more that the students are becoming fluent with text, because, I mean, face it, that if it's more about knowing about, then it becomes an intellectual argument. And I think that's the part that kind of pains me, is that students don't feel that they know enough, so they're not smart. Well, that doesn't really mean that. You can be smart by just reading the text on your own. You're smart enough to read Julius Caesar. You're not going to get it all. That's fine. But you're smart enough to make it your way through there, and you have just as much right to talk about it as SparkNotes or anybody else because you are smart enough to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Okay.
I think so.
What's next on the agenda? Are you going to do 20 performances of An Iceman Cometh next summer or something really
– Well, Dave.
Something really tedious.
So think about it. So, each summer I look forward to, in reconnecting with my family. So this past summer I did not see my family very much.
Ah, yeah, there you go.
Okay, you got it? So I got a lot of stuff to do around the house.
There you go. Okay, so that's your big project.
Well, now, I thought they went with you.
Well, okay, so it was kind of interesting because when I designed the project, it was going to be kind of my thing. So I'm going to do this, and, everybody in my family is excited I got it. And, oh, yeah, by the way, you'll go to this performance. And when we're in California, I'll just go to the performances and you can go wherever. And we kind of agreed on it. Well, the sons, the boys, wanted to go to the performances. So they ended up going to a lot of those. So I still saw them for pockets of time, but I was also gone for
big chunks.
Yeah, like when I did my mid-Atlantic tour, you know, that was like a 6-day sort of thing, you know, whereas usually in the summers it's I'm going to hang out with my family and, oh yeah, by the way, I need to work on the house.
Here's,
which is what I'm going to do this summer.
Here's a question that I have too is, you know, we struggle with, you know, the idea of doing Shakespeare occasionally, you know, within our community theater, and some community theaters do it and some community theaters don't. And right. Most community theaters that do it don't really make a whole lot of money on it. But I guess the question is, you know, overall you saw sort of a mix between what professional and some community right. and college or whatever. Should community theaters do Shakespeare from a audience size standpoint or quality standpoint? I mean, did you find that you really, there really was no, you know, hard and fast rule on that, or did,
well, I think,
did you?
I think the ones that the groups that had established that community tie, that the community understood that in the last Saturday of June that there was going to be a Shakespeare festival or Shakespeare play, and that you bring your lawn chairs out and we're going to bring food and drink and we're going to just hang out on a Friday night and watch. You know, I think that made sense. The thing that did go through my mind is it doesn't seem like all of Shakespeare's plays are very good moneymakers.
Right.
I think I understood that. And I think that's this past summer, I think that's the reason why several of them kind of scaled back. In fact, I was supposed to see Timon of Athens in New Jersey, and I was looking forward to it. Well, they had to pull it, because, and I think that it was probably a wise decision, because I think most people thought with the recession, we better go with the big stuff. We better go with the stuff that people know, because Timon of Athens is probably not going to knock it out of the park. Maybe with people that are more familiar with it, but the usual people, maybe so, maybe not. So
I guess it doesn't matter if it's Shakespeare or something else. Name recognition has a lot to do with pulling
right.
in an audience.
I think so. And I think, you know, it's, you know, maybe it's, you know, a part of the canon that they do for the summer. We'll do, you know, some of these other plays, but we'll throw in a Shakespeare. And I think it has a lot to do. Again, the ones that I felt like were more successful, that is, that there was – that people were happy that there, and there was a pretty good audience out. It seemed like there was a relationship that had been built, that there was, well, and sponsorship too. I saw a lot of sponsorship this summer. Yeah. Right. But there was, that was like the theater is not so much us up here and you folks down there, but it's all of us together celebrating art, celebrating right. theater. And part of theater is Shakespeare. And let's see what we can pull off, you know, with one of Shakespeare's plays.
It's kind of a recognition of how much the audience is part of the performance,
right.
in essence, and the maybe where it's successful, it's community theater with the community,
right.
you know, much closer to it, rather than, you know, we're just performers and you bought a ticket, you know,
right.
kind of thing. Yeah,
right. And I was usually the thing I felt bad at. I don't want to say I felt bad, but I felt kind of lonely this summer. Is that I was the outsider person that just bought the ticket, but I was able to look around at the people that were there, and I could tell, you know, in overhear the conversations that they had been doing this for a while, that this was a part of their lives.
Right.
And I thought that, I mean, I really appreciated that. The thing that pained me though, is I didn't feel like here in Indiana at this point, from my point of view, that we didn't have something like that. Michigan, I think, does, but I just didn't, it wasn't like, there's a place that we can go to and, you know, see, you know, Shakespeare. And I was looking again only through the lens of Shakespeare at that point.
Right. Yeah.
I have a question. You obviously saw them in all different size venues.
Yes.
Does it work better as far as in a relationship with an audience if it's in a small theater like the one we have in Bristol, or if it's like someplace like the Morris where they have 2,000 seats, or a big open-air amphitheater like in New York at the Delacorte?
Well, and I feel like sometimes I have a lot of experience going to the Shakespeare Festival in Stratford, Ontario, and I feel like sometimes things get lost there. That seems to be like a really huge venue. But this summer, we saw from a large venue like in Washington, D.C., to a medium size in Stanton, to kind of a tent outdoor sort of venue there on in, right off the Hudson. I saw an incredible version of Pericles, to one in Minnesota, which it was just probably about 30 of us outdoors. And I can't, each of them, I think, made that connection. Maybe King Lear in D.C. didn't make that connection so much, but I'm not sure if you really want to see what's going on or be very much a part of what's going down there. But I still empathize. But like the one that we saw in Minnesota, you know, it was the, and they said this in their brochure, they said, we're, you know, we are, you know, you and us, we're right there together. And they came out in the audience. And I know that sometimes people consider this as a stunt, but, you know, it still worked that one of the characters would come out and use one of the audience members a visual, or march them up on stage to say, here is a description, here's a woman, and then use that. You know, I was kind of sensitive to that. Well, is this just stunt? But that was just how that theater was. Mm-hmm. And the one in Stanton, Virginia, which I've mentioned before, something that came out there, but there was again, I think there was just an acknowledgement that the audience is there and that the audience is a part of it. And I think that was because of some really skilled actors, or just even like college students, the one in Minnesota, that acknowledged, you know, you're a part of this, what is it, Greek theater? You're part of this service.
Yeah.
You know, and that we all are together. We're going to, they seem to enjoy themselves. The actors did. The two that I mentioned to you, they didn't seem to enjoy themselves. It was like, let's get through this gig and get back on the road, sort of thing. Blow out of here.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Dave.
This has been really great. You have now inspired the longest episode of Theater Geeks that we have recorded to date. No, that's great. I mean, it's just wonderful conversation. So, we hope to do more of it. And let us know if you have another another adventure like this. Yeah, let us know about your next stunt related to theater.
I think it's great.
And so, anyway, thanks for being with us. That's all for this episode. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm the quiet John Schaub.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and obviously we are Theater Geeks.
There we go.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Theater Geeks. If you have a suggestion for a topic that you'd like to hear us discuss, or just a question, or just a comment, use our feedback form at theatergeeks.com. Music for Theater Geeks was provided by musicalley.com.